All right, let's do this. How are you, what the fuckers? What the fuck, Nicks? What the fuck, buddies? What's happening? I'm Mark Maron. This is my podcast. Welcome to it. How's everything out there? Are you guys okay? Listen, a couple of things right up front here. There's going to be a live episode of WTF on Sunday, November 14th in New York City. And admission is free. You hear me? Are you hearing this? I'll be talking movies with author Jason Bailey, who wrote the new book, Fun City Cinema, New York City, and the Movies That Made It. And we're doing this at the Paris Theater on West 58th Street, the only single-screen movie theater left in Manhattan. All right, so listen. And listen close. You listen to me and listen close. Because I'm only saying it once. I'll say it twice. At noon Eastern today, we will post the sign-up link on the WTF Pod Twitter account. It's going to be first come, first served, so click that link and sign up before tickets are all gone. That's WTF Pod on Twitter at 12 noon today. You hear me? That's for the free live podcast in New York City at the Paris Theater on West 58th Street. November 14th, Sunday. Bring your coffee. Get a nice coffee, maybe a bagel or something. Huh? Could you toast this a little more? Could you please toast this a little for a few more minutes? Could you take this back in and toast it for a few more minutes? Do you have a cloth napkin that I could put out? Sorry, working on an impression of a specific person that's not a celebrity. And I was fucking nailing it. The other thing I want to mention tonight, I'm at Largo here in Los Angeles for the last time I will be doing this full set like this. So I don't know if there are tickets or not left, but this is it before I go. I'm looking forward to going to New York. I've not been to New York since the plague. I've no idea what to expect. If it's anything like Los Angeles, it's going to seem tenuous at best. Think about that, man. Fucking year and a half or however long it took. Ongoing. Terror and trauma and fear. Lockdown. And we're all jacked in. We completely acclimate and adapt to a day-to-day engagement with the computer in a way that was life-sustaining. That was our life. Streaming, Zooming, reading, whatever it is, whatever rabbit hole you choose, whatever activity you were doing, the internet became our qualifier. That's codependent talk. That's Al-Anon talk. That's program talk for who you are codependent to, who you are enabling, who you are trying to fix, who you are trying to make behave differently. The internet is our qualifier culturally. We love them, her, it. Sometimes it's scary. Sometimes it tells us things we don't want to. Sometimes it behaves in a bad way and we can't really stop it. That is who we are codependent. That is a symbiotic thing. And it became desperate and essential during lockdown. So in the middle of all that trauma, in the middle of all that fear, in the middle of being ripped open and facing the unknown on a viral level and also on an environmental level, we depended on that connection. So imagine what it did to our fucking traumatized brains. Imagine that interface now. Imagine that. I've talked about it before. We volunteered for it. Now we're all pimped out by the algorithm. And your reality, your sense of reality, your perception is guided and defined by the choices you make streaming, by the choices you make online, by the choices of content that you curate and allow into your brain. That is the parameters of your perception. I mean, outside is outside. There's your car, there's your hose. Where's your cat? That's the store. Be careful. Fill it up. Want to take a drive? Fill it up. plug it in. I'm going to cook this thing. That reality has a context. That's the reality. Slow going. But the electrified perception of what you allow into your brain in the form of content or information. What is the context of your perception? What are the parameters of your perception? What are you logging into? What choices have you made that will then enable the great throbbing algorithm to mine your desires? Your brain is a fucking whore. Turned out. You let it happen. I like the free thinking whores. Yeah. You're making all the choices, big boy. Yep. Felipe Esparza is on the show today. He's a comic, and people may have seen his stand-up specials on Netflix or when he won Last Comic Standing. He's been a regular on Superstore and the Eric Andre Show. Funny guy. Odd guy. We'd only met a couple of times, but I was always sort of fascinated with him. Worked with him once. Was happy to talk to him. He's on the Netflix series Gentified. The second season premieres this Wednesday, November 10th. He's currently on tour, and you can go Felipe'sWorld.com to see the dates and get tickets. Also, his podcast is called What's Up, Fool? You can get wherever you get podcasts. Funny guy. Every now and then, there's a decision that's a no-brainer, and I can tell you from experience, it was a no-brainer to use Stamps.com when we started using it 11 years ago. Crazy. 11 years ago. Now, more than a decade later, Stamps.com is better than ever. The Stamps.com mobile app is like having a post office in your pocket wherever you are. You can take care of things on the go, like mailing checks, sending invoices, legal documents, and more. Easily schedule package pickups through your Stamps.com dashboard. And when you need to take care of shipping, all you need is a computer and printer. Stamps.com even sends you a free scale. Make the same no-brainer decision that over 1 million other businesses have with Stamps.com. Sign up with the promo code WTF for a special offer that includes a 4-week trial plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. Just go to Stamps.com, click on the microphone at the top of the page, and enter code WTF. Hi. So what, do you play anything?
I've been practicing the piano. I have a keyboard.
Yeah.
So I've been practicing on it and on YouTube.
Yeah.
I watch the colors go down and
yeah.
I know how to play the beginning of Commodore's Easy.
Yeah.
And I know how to play the beginning of a lot of songs.
Yeah.
Just to fool people.
Sure, man. Yeah. Like, when they go like, "Do you play?"
Yeah. Well, sure, I know how to play a little Claire de Lune real quick.
It's amazing on the fucking YouTube that like you can just learn anything you want.
Yeah, anything.
You know, back in the, like, how old are you, man?
53?
I'm 58. So like when we were kids, you had to go get a guy.
Yeah.
You had to go take a lesson.
You got to find him and hang out with a mariachi or something.
Yeah. That's great music.
I knew a guy that was in a regular rock band in Corpus Christi. He used to work like a bartender.
Yeah.
And he joined a conjunto band.
Yeah. Well, that's where it all comes from, Texas, man. He's a drummer?
He's a drummer.
So what have you been doing, man? I saw you at the airport. You look like you were going at it.
We started touring again. I have a tour called the Unmasked Tour. It's going through next year.
Do you do shows in Spanish?
When I was working, I did a Netflix special.
I saw that in Spanish, yeah. And what do you see in terms of the difference in how many people watch it? Like, do you get a bigger audience, I guess?
I haven't noticed.
You don't know.
I get emails.
You can't tell with the Netflix.
Sometimes I get an email from a guy like in Peru. Hey, in Spanish. Thank you. I got it. But the people who saw my English one, they saw the Spanish one, and they like the Spanish one better.
Really? Do you know why?
Probably because my Spanish is more of a West Coast, East LA, you know, Spanish.
Yeah.
West Coast Spanish. Than the Spanish that they speak in, like, Spain or Venezuela or
like
Cuba.
More, like Mexico.
Yes.
Yeah.
My Spanish is not like Mexico, but because I noticed that the dialect didn't work. And a lot of Spanish words that I use here in America don't exist in the Spanish language.
Really?
Like, we made it up.
Oh, here.
Yeah, like when we say in English, yeah. Hey, can you fix my brakes?
Yeah.
And it's, and if you grew up in Boyle Heights or East Los Angeles,
yeah.
Lincoln Heights, you know, West Coast, Albuquerque.
Yeah.
You say, hey, man, can you fix my brecas? We had an A-S. But that word doesn't exist. The right word is frenos.
Really?
Somebody corrected me in Mexico.
Brecas?
Brecas.
Yeah. Yeah, I grew up in New Mexico. So I guess it's probably the same Spanish.
Yes.
But did you, you were born in Mexico?
I was born in Mexico, snuck in, fair and square.
Yeah? How old were you?
Oh, man, I was like four or three.
Really?
I remember I was four because when I got to America, I went to kindergarten.
So your whole family come over?
Just my mother, my dad, and my three brothers.
Do you remember it?
Yeah, my dad came first. He came over here because...
He snuck in?
Yeah, we had a family member that were already here already. Yeah. His family members.
And they were like, come on, make the run for it.
Hey, come over here, man. There's plenty of work.
Yeah.
Most of my dad's cousins and brothers were working for, Warner Brothers Records.
Oh, really?
They were stacking vinyls in
boxes?
In the boxes and
packing
stacking
the
them and putting in a machine and they would put the plastic over them.
So that's like 49 years ago.
Yes. That was like 79.
Oh, wow.
And my dad, we went from, we live in Sinaloa, Mexico, which is like 11 hours from the border.
Oh my God.
An 11 hour drive.
Way down there. Yeah.
So we drove, I remember driving when we were little, to Tijuana, Mexico. My dad's aunt lived there.
Yeah.
My dad's cousins lived there and his sister. So we moved, my mom and my brother, five of us, we moved into a house. They already had like seven kids.
In Tijuana.
In Tijuana. So now there's 12 kids and there's like three parents in one house, two bedroom house.
Oh my God.
We stood there for 2 weeks.
And these are your cousins?
Yes. And we crossed the border with, I remember this as a little kid, but we crossed the border and we got caught.
Yeah.
Like we made it all the way to San Clemente, but they had their own thing going on back then. Like, I don't know, maybe it was the LA County Sheriff's or Minuteman, but they had a border patrol stop there too.
Yeah, yeah.
Like you think you made it? Nah, you didn't. Check this out. We have another one. So we got pulled over there and we were put in a little jail.
In San Clemente.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then we got deported. My aunt, who lived in San Ysidro, California, she came to go visit us.
Yeah.
And I don't know what these adults plotted when we were asleep, but they came to us and they said, we're going to cross the border in 2 weeks. And they told my little brother to, they gave my brother an identity.
Yeah.
Already at 1 or 2 years old.
Yeah. What, they gave him papers?
Yes. So he has to dress up like a little girl.
Oh, no. Yeah.
And his name was Patty.
Yeah.
And I talk about it in my second part special, but yeah.
Which special? What's that one called?
That's called Translate This. That one, my wife and I, we produced it ourselves. But my little brother was dressed like a little girl with my aunt. My aunt dressed him like a little girl, and he wore a little dress. And then he practiced his name.
Yeah.
He wore the dress for about a week.
Yeah.
And we get to the border, and the border patrol asks him, what's your name? He says his name, and we get in.
Yeah, he said Patty?
He said, what's your name, boy?
Yeah.
Me llamo Patty.
That was it.
And my brother's gay now, but you know.
I don't think that did it.
No.
But that was your ticket, huh?
That was our ticket. We've been here ever since.
And that, like, how does that, like, I have no understanding how that works. So, like.
We get here, right? But we don't just cross the border and, like, go home somewhere. Like, whoever was driving us took us to Carson, California.
Yeah.
And there was like a house and there was like a lot of families, not just us.
Yeah.
In different rooms.
Yeah.
And I guess they're waiting for their money.
Yeah.
And if you don't get their money, you know, I don't know what they do.
Oh, you mean the
hub.
Yeah. So the guys who took you across, the mules or whatever you call them, coyotes. What are they called?
Coyotes.
Mules are drug guys, right?
Yes.
Right. So you got to pay them. So that's where that happens.
Yes.
Yeah. So a lot of people meet family members who have the bread.
Yes, there's still like immigrants. We have like our own taxi service, you know, bootleg. Like my grandmother, she had a visa.
Yeah.
And she would come visit us from Tuxpan, Nayarit, that's even 20-hour drive from the United States.
Yeah.
23-hour drive.
Yeah.
And she would just, She will go to United States, and then she'll right there on by the on Los Angeles and Third Street. They used to be a Greyhound station, but now it's on Santa Fe.
Yeah,
there's all kinds of like bootleg gypsy cabs, you know, from Mexico.
Yeah.
And then my grandmother will just talk to a guy and goes, "I'm going to Tuxpan, Nayarit. How much is it to take me all the way home?"
Wow.
And that driver will just drive her
really
from Los Angeles all the way to Mexico.
For 20 hours.
And then along the way, he'll pick up another person.
Yeah.
And just along the way. So he's picking up people along the way in his little car.
Yeah.
And then he'll just hustle his way back to America.
Wow.
So that my mom, I don't know how she did it, but she knew this taxi service. That's,
so when you get here in that situation, how long are you like afraid or like you're undocumented? How long does that happen?
I was little, so I don't remember. I was just told, run home.
Yeah.
After school.
But do you eventually get to citizenship?
Yes. My father got his green card. He settled. He had a visa and
working at Warner Brothers?
Working at Pike. He was like a welder.
Oh, okay.
He worked for this metal shop place. My mom later on told me that they were like working for like federal projects. And then we got our papers also in 1981.
And that was it?
Yeah.
And then
my mom and dad are American citizens now.
Yeah.
And my dad took his citizenship class test in Spanish.
Yeah.
Because he's been here over 25 years. So when you're in America for over 25 years,
yeah,
and you go take your citizenship class,
yeah,
and your test, you take it in your own foreign language.
Really?
So my dad's test said, ¿cuáles son los colores de la bandera de Estados Unidos? Por rojo, azul, y blanco.
Yeah.
What are the colors of the stripes of the United States? Red, white, and blue.
Are they both still alive?
They're both alive.
Yeah. Are they together?
No, my dad lived in an old folks home somewhere in East LA.
Oh.
And my mom she's living at home with a little Alzheimer's.
Oh, they both have Alzheimer's?
Just my mom.
Yeah. And do you take care of her?
No, my mom has a nurse that shows up.
Yeah.
And then my brother shows up.
Yeah, it's just the two of you?
Yeah. My brother shows up every other week, every other day. And my brother, one of my other brothers lives there.
Oh, so you got two brothers?
Yeah.
Oh, older one?
One brother lives there. The other one doesn't. He just visits.
But you got older and a younger?
They're all younger. I'm the oldest.
Oh, yeah? So when you get here...
Pati.
Huh?
Pati visits.
Yeah. When you get here, so you grew up the whole time in Los Angeles?
Yeah, Boyle Heights.
And what was it like, you know, coming up and like... So you're here since you're 4 years old.
We live like...
I watched some of the special.
Yeah.
You know, and it sounds like it was pretty gnarly. Pretty heavy.
Yeah. We lived in different parts. Like, we first lived in Boyle Heights by General Hospital next to the freeway.
Yeah.
And then we moved to the west side by Olympic and Washington.
Yeah.
And then we moved into the housing projects of Aliso Village, Pico Aliso, Pico Gardens.
And how old were you then?
Like 5, 6. I started second grade at Utah Elementary, which was a little elementary inside the housing projects.
Yeah. Now, were the projects terrible or are they all right?
They were bad, man. When I was a little kid, I remember when I was in fourth grade, we couldn't go outside for recreation or nutrition.
Yeah.
Because there were shooting outside.
Yeah.
I think there was a Crip gang and Flats gang.
So that would be, what, Latino gang and a black gang?
Yes.
Oh, that goes on all the time, or it used to. I used to live in Highland Park. It used to be bad there, I think.
Yeah, it was bad back then.
And when did you, like, did your parents stay together the whole time?
Yeah, my parents stood together the whole time.
Really?
They separated, like, later on when I was an adult.
And then got back together?
No, they're not together no more.
Oh, yeah.
They didn't get divorced or nothing like that because my mom waiting for my dad to die and get his social.
That didn't happen.
No, it's the waiting game now for her.
Didn't work out. Well, she's not going to remember.
Yeah.
So what did, when did you start, because like in the, when I watched the special, which one did I watch, the last one, what was that called?
Bad Decisions.
Yeah, that's good. It was really funny. But it sounds like, you know, from the get-go, so all three of you kids are in the house, and it sounds like it's pretty crazy.
Yeah.
But what was it like? Was it booze or what?
My dad was an alcoholic, and he worked all day.
Yeah. And he came home and drank.
Yeah.
And then yelled.
Yelled.
Yeah. Beat everybody up.
Yeah. He used to fuck us up.
Yeah.
Like, I remember one time I was we were living across the street from Pecan Park. That was before he moved into the project.
Yeah.
But we were still in the same neighborhood, but didn't move into the project till later. My dad, oh man, I was such a dumbass.
Yeah.
I was playing with a soccer ball.
Yeah.
And I kicked it real hard.
Yeah.
And I broke our window.
Yeah.
Our front window.
Right,
and just,
right.
Kah!
Yeah.
And my dad was drinking with his friends, like next door and like right across the street. He was watching me the whole time. And they were all drinking beer. And then he saw me and I knew it was on, right? So
yeah.
I ran to the house and, my dad was trying to like find something to beat me with, you know, like a belt or or water hose or whatever, right? And he was drunk, he was mad, and my mom was trying to calm him down. Like, hey, calm down, you know, in Spanish, cálmate, cabrón, estás loco, you know, calm down. Yeah. Then my dad like couldn't, he was freaking out because he couldn't find nothing to hit me with. So he was trying to unhook the fucking the hose from the washing machine.
Yeah.
All angry, just to scare me more.
Yeah.
And then that's when my mom tried to stop him, and he just pushed my mom out the way. And then, like, we just, I started crying, and everybody started crying, and he freaked out, and he didn't hit me, though. He just ran out.
Everybody started crying. That was enough of a unified effort, the tears.
Because that was like the second time I broke the window, like, in a month.
Oh.
The first time we were playing in the house, and I unscrewed the wooden piece of my mom and dad's bed, like their backboard.
Yeah, headboard.
Headboard.
Yeah,
and it was like a long wooden. It looked like a pole.
Yeah,
and I started to hit my brother with it, and I threw it at him like a spear.
Yeah,
but it went through the window and it broke.
Yeah,
yeah.
So that was strike one.
That was strike one. I got beat for that one.
Yeah, so there was just like a lot of beating.
Yeah,
all the kids,
all of them,
and your mom.
Yeah,
ugh, it's terrible.
Just shoving at first, but then fist.
Yeah?
Yeah.
With the kids or your mom?
My mom, just that one time I talk about in a special that I remember.
Oh, that was the one time?
Yeah.
That he choked her and, yeah.
Yeah.
So when did you start checking out?
Checking out what?
Like with drugs.
Oh, I started like at late. I started when I was 19. But I was drinking like 16, you know.
Yeah.
I would find a beer. We're drinking, my friends and I, or 40.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mickey's.
Yeah, sure.
And...
Yeah, high school stuff.
But then, like, in high school, I started drinking more with my friends, like, after school.
Yeah.
But then I started smoking pot when I was 19 at a Christmas party with my friends.
Yeah.
Then I started smoking weed every day.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I started, there was a lot of crack in my neighborhood.
Yeah.
And PCP.
Oh, yeah.
Not so much heroin, just PCP and
PCP,
crack.
PCP, that's a rough ride.
And I never touched that stuff.
No.
Like, I have, and a lot of my friends... They were selling it.
Did they like it?
They were selling it.
Yeah.
Cause my neighborhood first was known for Thai butter.
Yeah.
It was called Thailand.
Yeah. So good weed.
Good weed. Like it was called the Thailand, my neighborhood.
Yeah.
And they would just saw weed. Like everybody would show up.
Right.
But then that changed to crack.
Yeah.
Then bam, it was like zombies all over my neighborhood. Like it went down.
You remember them?
Yeah. It was bad.
Yeah.
Like you saw a whole family go down, man.
Really?
Yeah, I remember watching, man, I was standing in the streets and I saw a guy show up with a Jeep Cherokee.
Yeah.
And then later on sold the Jeep Cherokee for $200 to somebody with pink slip.
$200.
And then I saw him with I saw him 2 weeks later, same clothes. Then I saw him in a bicycle with ripped shoes.
And it just kept going worse and worse.
Worse and worse.
And then he was just naked.
Yeah.
Running down the street.
Living in Skid Row.
Oh, that's too bad. So it shifted to crack. But did you do this PCP?
I did. I did all the stuff. I did PCP. I smoked crack.
It's hard to handle that PCP, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's pretty crazy for a while.
Yeah. You think you have Superman strength.
Yeah.
You start biting people's ear off.
Then you smoke the crack?
Yeah. I smoked the crack when my brother got shot.
Which brother?
My brother Angel.
Patty.
No, my brother Angel. He was with me when we crossed the border.
Yeah.
He
all
was
three
shot.
Of you.
Yeah. He was shot for being a bad person, you know. There was no Brown Lives Matter for him, and he deserved that, you know.
What happened?
Him and his friend, this is from rumors, you know, I don't want to put him in. Give him another record, they were just driving around doing like, looking for a rival gang, you know, trying to buy beer,
yeah,
looking for trouble.
How old was he?
20.
Yeah,
probably 20, 21. And they saw a car, and then they started following a car, I don't know who shot first, but they were like in a 20-minute car chase shooting at each other.
Yeah.
But the other car was a sheriff's car. Oh. Yeah. They were on the cover. Yeah. They were dressed with Pendletons too.
Yeah.
Yeah. So my brother was shot like in the head, in the mouth, a leg.
Oh my God.
And he survived, man. He survived. He was two of his friends passed away.
In that same shootout?
Yeah.
But he survived.
He survived.
How is he now?
He's good, you know. He walks a little crooked, living right in Mexico now.
Yeah, but he can talk and everything?
He can talk, everything's normal. Like as soon as like I remember he was when we went to go visit him in jail. Not jail, but pretty much jail. He was in County General Hospital.
Yeah.
But it was like in the jail ward.
In the jail part?
I didn't even know they had that.
Yeah, sure.
So they had to check our IDs, and we went to go visit him. His leg was chained to the bed.
Wow.
And he was in a little coma, but he came out of it. He was in a wheelchair for a while, you know, he couldn't move his legs.
Right.
I remember Father Greg Boyle.
Yeah.
He grew up in our neighborhood. Well, we grew up in his neighborhood.
Yeah.
His church.
Yeah.
So we grew up with him. We known him since he was little. Since we were little.
Father Greg Boyle?
Yeah.
He did the
Homeboy Industries.
Yeah, Homeboy Industries. They do all this stuff, right?
Yes.
Bakery too, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
We grew up with knowing Father Greg Boyle. Like, he baptized our friends.
Oh, yeah.
He did our first communion.
So your whole life.
Like, he baptized my daughter.
Your whole life, you know.
Yeah, I knew him. And so he knew how bad we were already.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what about him and your brother?
So he went to go visit my brother periodically at that hospital. My brother was the same hospital where Muhammad Ali went for brain injuries.
Yeah.
And Los Amigos, Rancho Los Amigos. And so my brother, one day he blinked at me. He goes, "Hey, fool, I can move my legs already." He goes, "Don't tell nobody. I want to stay here for a long time. I'm going to stay here longer." He goes,
"He was comfortable?
You got good food here."
Yeah.
So one day Father Greg shows up and he starts blessing him with holy water and he does a little cross.
Yeah.
And then Father Greg throws the holy water in his legs. And my brother turns into the exorcist. "It burns! Oh, it burns!"
Yeah.
Father Greg freaks out.
Yeah. That's funny. Did he go back to Mexico like after he recovered or what?
No, after he recovered, he was in the neighborhood with a wheelchair for a while.
Yeah.
And being still doing his thing with a wheelchair, like, you know.
What, doing the bad shit?
Yeah.
Was he like in a gang? Is that what it was?
No, he was just crazy dude, man.
Oh.
He loved drugs.
Yeah. He loved drugs.
And my brother went in a wheelchair, man. And he's doing his thing, man. I'm a handsome guy.
Yeah.
Still having sex in a wheelchair.
Yeah.
He would put girls on top of him, and his friends would push him down the stairs. So the wheels fall off, homie. Yeah.
And why'd he go end up back down in Mexico?
My brother was, long story short, when I was on Last Comic Standing, they did a thorough background check on all the contestants, NBC lawyers, private investigators. So I came back with a check on my criminal record. They said, "Felipe, were you arrested recently and you have 4 bench warrants?" I said, "No." "I haven't been arrested since probably 91.
Yeah.
And I was a DA reject, so I never went to court. And he went, so they showed me all these things. Well, that might be my brother. He probably stole my identity. And because he stole my other brother's identity too.
Yeah.
So I had to locate his daughter somewhere. And she sent me a photo of him. And I sent it to the private investigator.
Yeah.
And he put the name and the photo together. They didn't match.
Yeah.
So they found out it was him. After all, and they let me in the show.
Really?
Yeah.
And that's why he had to go to Mexico?
No, because he ended up going to prison, in and out of prison, so they finally got deported. They deported him.
Oh.
But he had a good job. He works for AT&T in Mexico.
Yeah, now he's got a good job?
Yeah. My brother told me that. I had him on my podcast. He said that as soon as he got deported, there's a calling center in Mexico.
Yeah.
For AT&T, and they call Americans.
Yeah.
And then they need Spanish speakers English speakers that they don't have to teach English to.
Right.
So you got all these thugs getting deported, you know, from MS-13, flats, 18th Street, and they're all Mexicans. So why not work at a calling center?
So
my brother all day, he calls people and tells them about their phone and hooks them up.
So it's just all these criminals and murderers?
Yeah.
Yeah, making the calls. Right. Well, at least you got a gig, right?
Yeah.
So when does this all start? So what'd you get busted for?
Oh, I was busted when I was like younger.
Yeah,
I had no job. I had no money. There was like a drug deal like between three guys.
Yeah,
and the guy dropped the dope when he ran.
Yeah,
and I was happened to be there.
Yeah,
and so the cop goes, "Hey, stop running!" He goes, "I wasn't even running." So the guy found like an ounce and a half, like not even like 20 feet from me.
Yeah,
and the guy had ran and.
So it wasn't even your dope.
Yeah, and then they took me for it. And those guys that I belonged to bailed me out. Like, I was out the next day. I was out the same day.
The guys that ditched?
Yeah.
They were your friends?
I knew who they were. Yeah. I didn't say who they were, but I just I didn't know who they were.
So that was it? Didn't stick?
No.
Huh.
It didn't come up to I went to Canada.
You went to Canada?
For the Montreal Comedy Festival and to open up for Russell Peters.
Oh, it didn't come up?
It didn't come up then, but when I went to a travel alone, it showed up.
Really?
And they asked me, "You've been arrested?" And I always say no, because you know, if you were not charged, or
you don't know if it's gonna come up, you might as well say no. And then if they find it, they're like, "Oh yeah, I didn't."
Yeah.
Yeah.
DA reject.
What does that mean?
The district attorney of the county rejected the case because it wasn't a winnable case.
Oh. So that means you were never charged?
I was never charged.
Huh.
Like I showed up to court.
Yeah.
And I saw my name and it was stamped. No, you could go home. Nothing happened to you.
Huh. So when do you, like, when you talk about in the specials, it sounds like you had the cocaine problem pretty bad.
Yeah.
Well, how was that after you were you doing comedy yet?
I stopped when I started doing comedy. I had like 10 years sober and then I picked it up again in Bakersfield.
So what's the story? So like, when we started talking about drugs, so that was like 19. So what were you doing? When did you start doing comedy? How old are you?
I started comedy when I was 24, 25.
So from 19 to 25, you were just kicking around?
Yeah, sober.
Yeah, oh, you were sober?
From 24 to 30, I was sober. From 21 to 31, I was sober, 10 years.
21 to 31?
Yeah.
So you got sober at 21?
Yeah.
Like for real?
Yeah, like nothing. I was going to church.
Wait, with Father Boyle?
Yeah, Father Boyle came to my house, and then he told me about this rehab called Live Again Recovery Home.
So you were really fucked up.
Yeah.
And this was when you were kind of a kid, though. It was like you were 20.
I got into a fight with somebody in the neighborhood. They were going to jump me.
Yeah.
And he knew. So maybe you should get away from the neighborhood for a while.
Yeah. So, like, but he seemed to like your family, or he was just good to everybody.
Yes, my mom wanted to go talk to him too, though.
Oh, okay. So you go talk to the priest, and then the priest comes and talks to you.
Yes.
And then he said, "You got to go to rehab." And you said, "Okay."
Yes.
And then you got straight, and you were doing the program and everything.
Yes.
Yeah, for a while.
And then when I was in rehab, we used to have like visitors, because our rehab was non-denomination. Yeah. So you could be a Muslim, a Jew, or whatever.
Yeah.
Every Sunday, everybody goes to their own church.
Yeah, all right, yeah.
So we had this guy named Tim, who lived in the valley.
Yeah.
He was Catholic, but he was like a brother, you know, like a kind of like a Nacho Libre type dude.
Yeah, yeah.
A brother.
Yeah.
He was not a priest.
Yeah.
He was like, he did the bad work for the priest. So he would go visit us and have programs for the men. You know, all the grown men, like activities.
Yeah.
Kind of like self-awareness, you know, like make you think about yourself. Yeah. So one day he tells us, "I want you guys to write down 5 things you wanted to do when you were little. Like your goals, what you want to be when you were little."
Yeah.
So we're like a bunch of heroin addicts. Some guys are 62, 70.
Yeah.
I'm young, crackhead.
Yeah.
All the heroin addicts there look at crackheads like we're losers.
Yeah.
We look at them like they're old. They ain't gonna make it.
Yeah.
And everybody was writing stuff like fireman or I wanted to be Superman or I want to be this. And myself too, I wanted to be Superman too.
Yeah, sure.
I want to be Batman. And then he looked at her and goes, no, what you want to be like before you get on drugs?
Yeah.
Like president or astronaut? All. Yeah. So everybody sent it back. So then I wrote on the first one, comedian.
Yeah.
Go to Italy, stay sober. Just 4, be happy.
Yeah.
5, I have no idea. I just left it blank.
Those 4 are good.
So that was like the first time I ever wrote down goals.
Yeah.
So he didn't want to see him after that. He goes, just keep it. And he goes, now you have something to live for. He goes, now you have a goal in life.
So why do you want to be a comedian? Who were you watching? Like, who were your guys? Like, what made you want to do that?
We have, when I was in high school, somebody was passing around a VHS tape.
Yeah.
Of 7 hours of comedy.
Just general. General. Made it.
They're all HBO specials.
Yeah, yeah.
It was Paul Rodriguez.
Yeah.
Howie Mandel with a hand, handbag.
Sure.
And Ronnie Dangerfield's Young Comedian Specials.
Yeah.
The one with Robin Williams hosted.
Uh-huh.
And Robin Williams Special and Sam Kinison, Young Comedians.
Oh, really? Oh, the Dangerfield Sam Kinison?
Yeah, that one. And we were watching them all day. That and we were watching porn, too.
Yeah.
And my friend Jackie Escalera.
Yeah.
He played that album for us.
Which one?
Bill Cosby, my brother Russell.
Oh, yeah.
Whom I sleep with.
Yeah.
And then my other friend, Emilio Garcia, he played Richard Pryor, that N-word is crazy.
Yeah.
And we memorized that one.
Yeah.
Hey, you can never get an ambulance in the projects unless you yell out, five black people killing a white woman. Where's the body?
So we
were all into stand-up.
Yeah. So it was a thing, you and your friends.
And here in California, my brother Angel, he was a gifted kid, by the way, my brother Angel.
The one who got shot?
Yeah, he was a magnet kid, man. Yeah. And he used to go to Sierra Park Elementary because he was smart.
Yeah.
And it was away from, he didn't go to the schools in the projects. So he found out with the other kids about the comedy show on KMET on Sundays from 7 o'clock to 9 o'clock.
Hmm.
It was a Dr. Demento show.
Oh, okay.
And then Dr. Demento, he would wear like a top hat.
Yeah.
But it was a radio show, and he would play all the comedies like George Carlin and Young Weird Al Yankovic.
Yeah, yeah.
So we would listen to that too.
You listened to Dr. Demento. So you guys were comedy freaks.
Yeah, my brother was an angel besides being, he was an exchange student too.
He was?
Like my brother was smart, man. Like he knew how to get in and fit in anywhere.
Huh. So and where was the exchange student?
At that park, at the school, Sierra Park, he signed up for a foreign exchange program.
Yeah.
Filled out all the application himself.
Yeah.
Just had my mom sign her name. She didn't speak bad English.
Yeah.
She goes to tell my mom, pon tu signature aquí, pon tu nombre aquí nomás. So she's just signing away. And then one day, my brother tells my mom, I'm going to need some money. You know, I'm going to go to Mexico.
Uh-huh.
What? Yeah, mom, they have a foreign exchange student. I'm going to Mexico. I'm going to live in Mexico City for about a week. And then that kid is going to come live with us. And man, my brother went to Mexico and he told me he didn't have to pay for nothing. They gave him an allowance.
Yeah.
And he had his own room.
Wow.
And he didn't have to share a room. He saw pyramids. He had lobster. He went to Cancun. He went to Chiapas.
Yeah.
He traveled. He got cultured in a Mexican culture.
Yeah, yeah.
That we don't know.
For a week.
Yeah. But then.
Did the other kid come?
That kid had to come to our house. And we live in the housing projects. 4 bedrooms. Like he had to share a room with 2 other people now. And we have bunk beds. And like.
He got the other
guy. He went to the bottom.
Yeah.
I said, no, motherfucker. You sleep on top. Yeah. And this fool was rich, man. Like he always had cash in his pockets. And he never shared. Like he would buy one ice cream.
Yeah, but he got a different education, huh?
Yeah, man, he was rich. It must have been a culture shock to hang around with, because I don't think rich Mexicans hang around with poor Mexicans in Mexico.
But he did in the States.
Oh my God, bro! Like he went from taking my brother to eat lobster, to standing in line to eat free lunch at the park.
did he have a good time, that kid?
He had a, man, I hope he did. Man, there's a funny thing. We went to the park, you know, the city park.
Yeah.
And they had a city pool.
Yeah.
And no cutoffs, you know. And they give you gotta put your clothes, you know, that green bag, and they take care of it.
Yeah.
Man, this kid is hanging around with us.
Yeah.
And he speaks only Spanish. And we're at the pool, and we're looking around. We're like, where's Javier?
Yeah.
Where's Javier? And then my friend's, oh, man, look at that fool over there. And, man, that fool wearing Speedos, bro. Speedos. Like, pretty much, for us, it's underwear.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's laying on the concrete floor like he's in the Bahamas, bro. Yeah. Like, he's
at the city pool.
Like, he's doing a tanning commercial, man. Yeah. Like, tropical. And he's laying there, man, like... In his head, he's in Acapulco, man.
Yeah. Yeah. How'd that go over? Not too good.
Everybody's laughing. Everybody said, hey, Javier, why come you're naked?
Yeah. So you guys are listening to all that comedy, and you're sober. So when you start at 24, you're sober?
Yes.
And where do you start doing the comedy?
I didn't know some place called... I forgot the name of it.
Yeah.
It was a coffee shop.
Yeah.
And it was vegan.
Oh, yeah.
And...
So it was like a alternative room?
Yes.
What year is that?
That was like 94.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
At a coffee shop.
Yeah.
Who else was there?
Jimmy Kennedy.
Oh, yeah.
Alonzo Bowden.
Yeah.
Freddie Soto.
Huh. Freddie.
Cynthia Levine.
Yeah. All at the coffee shop.
All at the little coffee shop. It was like punk rock music first.
Yeah.
And then while they're taking down their instruments, two comedians.
Huh.
And then while the other, then a punk band will show up.
Huh. Wonder what place that was.
It was right there on Fountain Avenue. And now it's called the Fountain Avenue Theater. But back then it was called something else.
Okay. And you just put together a set? Were you telling stories?
Oh, man. I went to the library. Went to the library,
yeah,
the Los Angeles County Library, and I asked this librarian, this old lady,
yeah,
and then I told her I want to be a comedian, like she was a career person,
yeah.
And he goes, I don't know how to write,
yeah.
So she takes me to these books in the library for comedy writing, like some of them were like Steve Allen,
really,
and one of them was Jean Perez,
yeah,
comedy writing step by step by Jean Perez,
yeah.
So I got that one,
yeah,
and that one taught me how to write and how to brainstorm comedy.
Really?
Like that guy would say that he used to write for just Johnny Carson and Steve Allen and these older comedians, man, from the old days. Jack something.
Benny?
Jack Benny.
So
he would say...
Or Jack Parr.
Jack Parr, yeah.
Yeah.
So Jack Parr, he was going to roll with Jack Parr, I guess, because I was reading a book. So Jack Parr would write a joke about planes or traveling.
Yeah.
So he'll write down columns like, all the planes that he could think of.
Yeah.
And airlines that he's been on. And on this column, he'll write stuff that he heard airline guests overheard. Like, this window is too hot in his plane. Or put the window up. Right. All those little things that he remembered things.
Yeah.
And then somehow all that, he'll come up with the jokes.
Huh.
By brainstorming.
And you tried that?
Yeah.
Huh. And it worked?
Yes.
Wow.
Sometimes I go back to it when I'm lazy.
Really?
When I'm going through when I'm bombing mentally, you know?
Yeah, writer's block.
And I took the book from the library, and then later on I bought it.
Huh.
Then there was another book called Comedy Writing Secrets by Jean Perez.
Jean, P-E-R.
It's been around forever.
Yeah, I know. I'm just one. I never heard of it, and it's, there it is. Jean Perez.
I was too cheap to join a comedy class. Judy Brown.
Yeah, Jean Perez.
Greg Dean.
Oh, what the hell is the name of the book?
Comedy Writing Step by Step.
There's a new comedy writing. It's a revised edition.
Yeah, I think his daughter revised it already, just right now.
That's crazy, man. I never heard of that fucking book.
Yeah, man. It's basic. Pretty much.
I feel like I need it. I need it.
Yeah.
I feel. I always feel like I don't do it right.
Me too. Oh, when I hear a comedian write a great joke, I feel like I'm never going
to
write like that.
Yeah, no, I didn't mean to. Because I talk, man. I just talk, you know, and then it starts to come together. I don't write jokes down. And like for all these years, every time I hear a joke, I'm like, why the fuck? Man, I got to get the book. And then I get a book and then I'll read the book. But you read the book.
Yeah.
But and it still helped you structure the shit.
Yeah, it helped you structure and...
That's crazy, man. So you got the book and then you just wrote the act and then you went on to the place on Fountain?
Yeah, I saw it on, I saw the Alley Weekly.
Yeah.
And it had like open comedian comedy.
Yeah.
And it had like all these rooms to do comedy.
Mm. And that was that. So you didn't know anybody?
No, I didn't know anybody.
And you just like, you just looked for open mics?
Yes. I didn't want to go alone. So I took my friend Rodney Enos.
Yeah.
And he was like my first friend I took to do comedy.
Yeah. And so you just started hitting those open mics.
Yeah.
Coffee shops, all the other places.
Coffee shops and wherever.
Yeah? What were you doing, like once or twice a week, three times a week?
I was going up like, that was Monday nights. So I would only go there Mondays till I got to know people and they told me about Tuesday somewhere.
Right.
And then Wednesday, Thursday.
So who was the crew?
I used to go in the beginning, I used to hang around with Jimmy Kennedy and Freddie Soto and...
When Freddie was just starting?
Just starting, yeah.
Oh, really?
But they were already funny.
Yeah.
And Alonzo Bowden.
He was just starting too? I guess, right. I forget. You know, we're old.
This is how
guys.
Old Alonzo Bowden was, man. He used to have a joke about, he goes, yeah, man, I want a job for the NFL as a guy holding the cord for the football coach.
Yeah.
You know the cord?
Yeah.
That's how old.
So he was just starting too. Wow, that's that group of guys. And then you just started going out every night.
Yes.
And when did you start? When did you get a break at a club ever? Were you going?
Oh, in '96.
Yeah.
Somebody told me that they were auditioning for a Latino comedy festival in San Antonio, and it was going to be Paul Rodriguez and Nelly Galan.
Yeah.
She's a producer of some other show that was on Def Jam, and Jeff Valdez from Colorado.
He was a
producer too.
Yeah.
And they told me about it, that they were gonna they're looking for comedians.
Yeah.
That lady at that place, Brenda, she told me. So I didn't know where to go. So I went to audition one day, and they said, I don't know. So then I saw in a newspaper they still haven't found comedians. So they needed a bunch of open casting at the Laugh Factory. So all these Mexican, Cuban, all these Latino comedians show up, and I show up too. And I do well, and I meet Pat Buckles.
Yeah,
and then she was rooting for me to be on the show. And
yeah,
I don't know what a set list is, and she wrote down a set list for me. Like, she goes, "Listen, do this joke, and that joke, and do this joke last."
She's the producer, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
the talent coordinator. So she wrote down my first set list. I didn't have a set list back then.
So that wasn't in the book, huh?
No.
You gotta learn that.
It was just writing. It wasn't how to get the show.
Yeah. So she put together the set list?
Yes.
And it worked?
And it worked. And I only had like 20 minutes, less than 20 minutes of material when I did that show.
Yeah? And that was, what was it called?
The Latino Laugh Festival on Showtime, live from San Antonio, Texas. That was a big Latin festival, man. Like, they had puppeteers from all over the world. They had these comedians that did comedy in Spanish. I met Greg Giraldo there. John Mendoza.
Mendoza.
Yeah, and...
I haven't seen him in a while.
Well, no.
He's a funny guy.
Yeah.
Geraldo was great.
Eric Estrada, wow. Paul Rodriguez.
There you go, Paul Rodriguez, huh? But did you do it in Spanish or no?
English, it was all English.
Oh, and it went good?
Yeah.
So now you're off and running.
Yes, but I was an open micer who just got a TV show.
Yeah.
As soon as 2 weeks later, somebody goes, "Hey Felipe, you want to go headline with me in Houston, Texas?" I say, "What? What is that?"
Yeah.
Because maybe you're going to go up second. Second? How about I go up first? You
right.
go up second. He goes, "I don't have an hour of material." He goes, "I barely have 20, man." Yeah. Yes. He goes, "Yeah, but they're going to pay us like $400 each, and they're going to fly us, and they're going to give us a comedy condo." And I said, "Oh man." I said, "Okay then."
You didn't have the...
I have nothing, man. I go up there, man, and I went from a live audience that was packed, 200 people for that taping.
Yeah.
And then the open mic was like 30 people, 40.
Right.
But then the first time I've been in the audience was 7 people.
Yeah.
Like, they didn't know who...
So you go in the headline at 7 people and neither of you have the time.
They didn't promote it well, and they didn't know who we were. The club was a black comedy club in Houston called Just Joking.
Mm-hmm.
And man, the first night we saw a bunch of girls coming to the with a bunch of chicks. They were standing outside smoking cigarettes. And we go, "Oh man, some hot chicks gonna come to this show, man."
Yeah.
And then when we go in, nah man, the waitresses leaving because there are not enough people for them to work.
Yeah.
So they were like, so now we were like, well, now they were mad dogging us.
Yeah.
That they were giving us dirty looks.
Right. Yeah.
So they left, and now it was just us with one waitress, one bartender. And the manager, there was nobody there, man.
No crowd.
So, man, I'm done in 7 minutes. So then after that, I started asking Like, what's your favorite tree? Where you from? I get off at 30.
Yeah.
I'm done.
Yeah.
Then the other guy does the same thing. Like, he's up there asking questions, too.
Just for trying to get something going?
Yeah. And then the last night, it was, man, like, it was so empty. I could hear, like, the ice melt and fall down on the beer.
Yeah. Yeah,
that's. And then, but the second night,
yeah,
we just started laughing, man. We saw a big old bunch of cases of beer and ice. We just laughed, like, yeah, come on, man, you brought too. There's too many people here. So they paid us.
Yeah.
The guy was paying us in tears.
Yeah,
so he gave us our money.
Yeah,
we leave, and my friend goes, "Hey, man, you ever been to a massage parlor?" And I said, "Never, man, never." Okay, yeah, we're gonna go to one.
Yeah.
We went to one massage parlor, and I've never been to a place like this. And the police already there.
They're already there?
Yeah, like they busted it. But what I didn't know, he goes, and then our cab driver goes, "Hey, don't worry about that. I know a better one. I know a better one."
Right.
So we go there, and it just says Tokyo Studio. Yeah. That's it.
Yeah.
And it was blinking. There's flies all over it, you know, the light. Sure.
Yeah.
And we go in there, like a, I don't know, man, it's a massage parlor, I guess.
Yeah.
I've never been to one.
Yeah.
So I'm laying there on the bed with my clothes on, just sitting there, and I didn't take my shoes off or nothing.
Yeah.
And I guess the person that massaging me, she's just sitting there too, like she's doing all these poses.
Yeah.
But I'm just sitting there,
waiting for something to happen.
And I didn't give her no money. And
yeah.
I paid her for the massage, but I didn't get no massage.
Yeah.
And I didn't pay for no extra stuff. And
yeah. Not very.
So I said, she gives me a hug and a bottle of water. We didn't do nothing.
Yeah.
And I leave,
yeah,
and I wait for my friend. And we start driving back to the condo, and man, I left the keys to the condo, the comedy condo.
At the massage place?
It's locked. Yeah, right. I guess so.
Yeah.
So we don't know where to get in.
Yeah.
So my friend says, "Man, you're a big guy, man."
Yeah.
"Kick the door down." Yeah. Like Miami Vice, your Tubbs, and I'll be Crockett.
Okay.
"You, I don't want to kick the door down, man."
Yeah.
He goes, "Come on, man, we made our money today. We'll just fix it tomorrow."
Yeah.
We're going to Home Depot. We're fucking fixing. No problem.
Yeah.
Just kick the door down.
Yeah.
And I don't know if he was like testing me. "Come on, man. Come on, dude. Come on, fool. Kick the door down."
Yeah.
So I fucking kicked the door down, and it just, God, like, it really, like when the cops do it.
Yeah.
I kicked the door down, and the door just flew open.
Yeah.
And then the little short redneck looking Yosemite Sam guy.
Yeah.
Comes running. "What the fuck, man?"
Yeah.
And it was the wrong condo we kicked down. So we're in Texas, man. This guy could shoot us now.
Yeah.
He could kill us.
Yeah.
And I ran.
Yeah.
I left my friend there.
Uh-huh.
So then my friend is talking to him, and he goes, "Hey, man, come back. It's all good. It's cool. It's cool." And my friend is telling the guy, "Listen, man. That's my friend. He kicked down the door."
Yeah.
"But we thought this was our condo. We're staying at the comedy condo over there."
Yeah.
"So you guys just go down kicking condos?" And my friend, like, he knew how to talk. And this guy's, like, younger than me. He started comedy, like, when he was 16, I guess.
Yeah.
He's young. He's been around, though. He said, "Listen, man, I want you to call a police officer right now. Call the police for they can straighten this out so you can have a police report of the door being kicked down."
Right.
"I ain't gonna call the police. I just want this door fixed." "We're gonna fix this door tomorrow, okay? We are gonna fix this door. We have cash on us right now. You want cash? We're gonna fix this door." So we start walking around, and the guy said, "All right, I better fix it." Then he gave him the phone number, and he gives him the address of the worst thing.
Yeah.
And we went back to the condo, and
just kicked that door down too?
The door was unlocked. We left it unlocked. Yeah. And we went in there, and we just kept laughing about the guy.
Yeah.
How he came out all scared and he didn't shoot us.
Did you fix the door?
No, we flew back home. Yeah.
Who was that comic?
Jeff Garcia.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
He was around for a while.
Yeah. He was cool, man.
That's a funny story. That's
funny. But it was funny, man. "Come on, Doc. Just fucking kick the door down, Doc. Kick the door down, Doc."
So that was your first headlining gig.
Yeah, man.
So what happened? So after the headlining gig, so that's like your baptism into the bullshit life. And then you come back here and you just start to put the time together?
Yes. I met another comedian at an open mic named Carlos Oscar.
Yeah.
At the Natural Fudge.
That was
the open mic where I met Jamie, I started.
Yeah.
And then in Hollywood, they had a comedy show on Hollywood Boulevard No, on Highland, right there at the Hollywood Hotel.
Yeah.
It was called Comedy Waldo's.
Okay.
And it was Waldo's, and they paid like $25.
Yeah.
So I met Willie Barsena there, and Willie Barsena told me about the Laugh Factory.
Yeah, yeah.
And he told me about a comedy room they have in Montebello.
Yeah.
So him and I started hanging out.
How's he doing?
He's doing good, man.
Okay.
He's touring. He tours a lot.
Good.
And he coaches baseball.
Oh, good.
For his kids.
Oh, that's good.
His kids are older now, but he loves baseball. So Willie Barsena, because the guy I hang around with from now on.
Yeah.
Him, Willie Barsena.
Well, he knows, at that point, he knows what's going on.
Yeah, man. So
you learn the job.
Yeah. He's doing colleges. Like, he's showing me check stubs. Like, wow.
Yeah.
And I'm impressed.
Yeah.
And he's like, one time I wrote a joke and I just wrote it for him. And he wrote me a check for it, $40.
Yeah.
And I was like, what? That was my first joke I ever sold. And
what was the joke?
It was, I'm Catholic. I went to confess for stealing a bicycle one time. And Father Greg Boyle told me, did you feel bad about stealing the bike? Yeah. Did you give the bike back? No. Where the bike at? It's right here outside the church. I don't want to leave it outside, man. Somebody's going to take it. So I wrote that joke.
Yeah.
And then I met another comedian, Joy Medina.
Yeah.
He was like a road comic that used to work with Pablo Francisco.
Yeah.
One man, one desire. So we were all at the Latino night. Pablo Francisco, Luke Torres, Rudy Moreno. They were like, these guys were like the veterans that they knew, man. If you knew these guys,
yeah,
you were going to make money because they had rooms that paid.
Right, right.
They were known in the area.
Yeah.
Steven Steakhouse in City of Commerce. That was like Rudy Moreno and whenever they need a comedy show.
So they like one-nighters.
One-nighters, bro. Yeah. One-nighters all over the east side. Like,
wow.
Like, all over the east side, Montebello.
And they paid.
San Bernardino, San Clemente, you know, San Diego.
And they all paid.
Visalia, California, Bakersfield, like there's a guy named.
So these guys would book them and produce them.
Yeah.
For money.
And then there's people that like, who just started doing comedy, Latin comedy in El Centro, a guy named Papa Chulo.
Yeah.
And he did stand-up shows for 12 years. And then there's a guy named Leonard Velasquez.
Yeah.
And he does Visalia and The Fox.
No
kidding. He's been booking me for 20 years.
And is it mostly Latino audiences?
Yeah. That's what Visalia is.
Yeah. Wow. So that's a whole network of fucking shows. Because like I noticed that when I talked to not so much Lopez, but that there's this whole other world, man.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, black comedy too. It's like there's a million rooms. You don't know about them. I don't know about them because I'm not playing them, you know?
And they pay.
Yeah. I used to do one-nighters in Boston, but it's a different thing. But I never knew that there was a whole one-nighter thing here.
Yeah, man.
Sounds like a lot.
There was a one-nighter, and they paid horrible. It was at the 4th and B in San Diego every Saturday.
Yeah.
They would pay the headliner $200. They would pay the feature $150. They would pay the opener $100 or $75.
Yeah.
And the three comedians will get a nice little room in the downtown.
Yeah.
And then when you go to the show, there is 1,800 people at that show.
Really?
1,800 people.
Holy shit.
1,800 drunk people. And they're dancing afterwards. And you have a check that you cannot cash. Or sometimes the check, they'll mail the check. So you have no money.
Yeah.
I remember me and this other comedian, man, we were hanging around with people at the show just to get free drinks and get free food from them.
Yeah.
Like, we would get to the club and go, you got coming in now. How much did it cost to get in? $20. I can't.
Yeah, you get ripped off, right?
Yeah.
But you were learning how to do it. So when did Last Comic Standing happen? So you're sober this whole time, too?
Yeah.
Why do you start doing coke again?
I don't know, if started freaking out and after
Last Comic Standing?
After 2002.
Was this after Last Comic Standing?
After Montreal.
Oh, so.
In 2005, I went to Montreal Comedy Festival.
Well, when did you do Last Comic?
2010.
Oh, okay.
But I sobered up in 2009.
Okay, wait. So 2004. So you get new faces?
Yes.
In 2005. So you've been doing comedy a couple years?
Yeah.
And you're a new face?
Yeah.
And you go up there and you see it all?
Yes.
You see what it looks like?
I've never been there, man. I was there with the new faces. Yeah. Jasper Redd.
Oh, yeah.
Natasha Leggero.
Yeah.
and a bunch of other people.
Yeah.
Joe Coy, I think he was a new face.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. It's wild. We were all kids, huh?
Yeah.
Wow. So that was 2005. I wonder if I was up there. I don't think I was up there.
2005, Greg Giraldo was there, and I think the two comedians from New Zealand got their deal there that year.
Flight of the Conchords.
Yes. Because I saw them walking around, and everybody was all over them. I think, who are those guys?
Yeah. And so what happened? Why'd you freak out?
I was doing drugs at Montreal.
Oh, you were?
Yes.
With who?
By myself. Oh. Or whoever wanted to get crazy.
Yeah. So is that where you started doing them again?
No, I started doing it like a month or 3 months before Montreal.
Yeah.
Somewhere.
Yeah.
Then I just went downhill after that.
Blow?
Yeah. Crack too. Oh, just crack.
Oh, you like crack.
Blow and crack. Whatever's around.
Yeah.
So, 1996, I do that Latino Laugh Festival, okay?
Right. San Antonio.
San Antonio. Jeff Valdez sells it to CBS somehow.
Yeah.
They're airing it on CBS at 3 a.m.
Yeah.
Comedians find out about it. Next thing you know, SAG-AFTRA gets involved. They send me a check.
Yeah.
So they send me a big fat check. I buy a truck.
Yeah.
So now I'm rolling.
Yeah.
So then I'm making money from that show still, you know.
Yeah.
When Byron Allen.
Yeah.
I get a check every once in a while for $80.
Yeah.
So it's the show that pays.
Yeah. So money's rolling in.
Money's rolling in. And then I'm getting booked to headline in Vegas.
Yeah.
Before Last Comic.
Okay. We're at Vegas.
At the Planet Hollywood.
Oh, yeah?
Hollywood.
So you're getting good gigs.
Yeah, and I would open up for comedians.
Which one?
Paul Rodriguez.
Yeah.
And Russell Peters.
Like, that's a big crowd, huh?
Like, I remember Russell's? When Paul Rodriguez gave me a check for like 3 shows, and then I saw the check, and I said, I think you made a mistake, man. That's like $2,000 a show. I only did like 6 minutes.
Yeah.
He goes, "Orale, that's the check." And he was like, "All right, I'll take it, eh?"
Yeah.
He goes, but then I gotta call him back again like an hour later. I only have one ID.
Yeah.
And I don't have a checking account. And is there any way I could cash it at that bank?
Yeah.
Without them telling me to join that bank?
Yeah.
So I gotta go back to his accountant and the bag, and then they cash it for me right there.
Good. Yeah, you got it settled.
I remember one time when I opened up for Paul Rodriguez in Reno.
Yeah,
he goes, he calls me up. He goes, "Hey, what is this about you complaining about your room that is too small? It's not hot enough. It's not cool enough. There's not enough fruit. What is this shit, man? You know what you were doing 6 months ago?" And I said, I didn't say shit, man. I just got here. I wasn't complaining. You will when you see my room." And he hung up. And I go to the room. It's like a palace.
Yeah.
It's a whole floor.
Yeah.
There's a piano. There's a hot chick.
He just wanted
There's
to,
a swing.
A swing. A hammock. So he just wanted to fuck with you.
Yeah.
So when do you have to, like, so at this time, are you married?
No, I have a girlfriend.
Yeah, but you're still using?
No, I stopped using it in 2009.
How bad did it get?
It got really bad.
Yeah.
Yeah, like I was up, I was like disappearing. Like 5 days awake.
Oh. Yeah. Missing shows?
Yes. Not missing shows. I would get to the show with 2 days of no sleep and kill it.
Yeah.
and then I argue with a comedian that's trying to give me advice.
Yeah. All right.
"Hey, bro, you should really watch yourself." "Oh, yeah, bro. next time you get a standing ovation with 2 days of no sleep, let me know, homie."
So you're a warrior.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, even the late Ralphie May, like, he jokingly, he gave me advice.
Oh, yeah.
"Hey there, buddy.
Yeah.
I heard you call up room service.
Yeah.
And order a spoon and baking soda." Yeah, man, I was like, one night, I was out of it, man. Like, the Laugh Stop Comedy Club, they used to headline me.
In Ohio?
No, in Houston.
Oh, Houston, right. Yeah. Oh, Mark. Mark.
Yeah, Mark Babbitt.
Babbitt, yeah.
Yeah, good guy.
Yeah.
He used to always book me. Yeah. He was one of the guys that would take me on the road with Freddie Soto and Joey Diaz and Willie Barcena.
Yeah. So he would. Oh, really?
Yeah. We used to do shows in Bakersfield.
Oh, okay.
And Juan Villarreal.
Yeah, Babbitt. He would run it. Road manage it.
Yeah. He was with Wild Wild West, I think.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I remember that guy.
Mark Babbitt was good, man. Like, I remember one time he booked me to do a show in Houston, $800. And like, wow. Then the show gets canceled 3 days later. He still sends me the check.
Huh. That's a good guy.
And I'm like, wow.
Yeah. I like that. I remember that.
That spoils me, man.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember that room, and then it got taken over by a weirder guy.
Yeah.
Not a great guy. It's been a long time, though. It's gone, right?
It's gone.
Is it gone?
It's closed.
Yeah. So so you cleaned up because you were a disaster? Did somebody step in or did who?
I called up room service, and I ordered a spoon and baking soda.
You did do that?
Yeah.
Oh, and yeah.
And I tore up the hotel, and they lost the account for the hotel.
And that was it?
Yeah.
And then you were like, I got to do this?
I got to do this.
So would you go back to rehab? Or you just stopped?
No, I just I started thinking about it, and I stopped. You know, I just stopped. You know, this is not good. You know, I'm funny. I gotta focus. So I stopped in 2009.
Yeah.
And I started focusing. And Joe Diaz told me about this movie.
Yeah.
With Nick Torturo and Paul Rodriguez.
Yeah.
So the director of that movie and producer.
Yeah.
Manny Mejia.
Uh huh.
Redford Mejia. He, I gave him my comedy special that I recorded at the Ice House. They record your video, though. So I had 33 minutes.
So you mean just a tape?
Yeah.
Okay.
So I gave it to him.
Yeah.
No, I had it in a CD.
Right, but it wasn't a produced special.
No, it was just the audio and
a set.
Yeah. 33 minutes. But I would sell those for $20.
Oh, okay.
I would make 100 of them.
Yeah.
So I gave everybody in the movie one.
Yeah.
And then he listened to it. And this kid must be on drugs or nuts.
Yeah.
But he comes up to me. He goes, Felipe, how would you like to do a movie based on this audio, this audio CD?
Yeah.
And I said, it's only 33 minutes. You want to do a short film or what?
Yeah.
So he goes, let's do it right now. So I think he's nuts. So I go on, you know, on a binge, and you know, I disappear for a while.
Yeah.
And I don't return his phone calls.
Yeah.
So he corners me one day and he goes, no, seriously, I want to do this movie.
Yeah.
So I have dinner with him.
Yeah.
While my wife is eating fish fillet at McDonald's waiting for me.
Yeah.
I'm at this dinner place in Beverly Hills with this guy and he buys me this big fat fish with purple sauce and I never had that fish was delicious.
Yeah.
Even the bone was good.
Yeah.
And he gives me a check and I sign over my comedy to him.
Yeah.
And
that 33 minutes?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he gives me a check. And I, wow, I could pay my rent for the next couple of months now.
Yeah.
I could buy groceries. So he hires a writer-director named Christian Sesma.
Yeah.
And he transfers the comedy into a 80-minute motion picture.
Yeah.
And then we shoot the movie in 9 days. It's called I'm Not Like That No More.
Yeah.
And I'm the star of the movie with Paul Rodriguez playing my father and all my materials in that movie.
And was it good?
Yeah. That movie went straight to iTunes, and then it disappeared. We had a big-ass premiere at the big movie theater in Arclight.
Yeah.
With red carpet and everything, 2009.
Yeah.
And then we had another premiere at the Ricardo Montalban Theater, and then their audio messes up, and it's sad, man. For those people that were there, man, you guys never got to see the ending of the movie. My bad.
And what happened to the movie? Still make money?
Well, no. The guy owns it, so...
Yeah. Doesn't matter.
It disappeared. I own copies, and every once in a while on Christmas, I release it on YouTube for everybody to watch it.
Oh, yeah? And that guy doesn't get mad, right?
No, he doesn't know what's happening unless he's listening right now.
But you feel good about it.
Yeah, because here I am, man. I'm like drinking, and this thing shows up. I'm in this movie. Like, I didn't expect this to ever happen to me, but I have my own movie starring Felipe Esparza, Edwin San Juan, Paul Rodriguez.
But when does the last comic happen? Next?
That year.
Okay.
In 2010, like almost eight after the movie's done, 2010 starts, and then I get the audition.
And you're clean then.
Yeah,
yeah. And then you win it.
Yeah.
How long? What is that process? Like 2 months? How long is that fucking thing?
Like 3 months.
3 months.
It was over by August.
And what was that? Like the second one, first one, third,
seventh,
one? Seventh. So does that now like
no house? Peter Ingram came up in front of all the 40 people and said, "Guys, we're not gonna have a house. We're going to have a just comedy going at each other. So you just compete against each other. No house, no extra stuff."
That's better. Who was in it that year?
I'll tell you the people that were in it who didn't make it through who are stars now.
Okay.
Tiffany Haddish.
Yeah.
Lil Rel. Yeah.
Yeah.
Lil Rel was top 10.
Yeah.
And Tiffany Haddish was top 20. And Cristela Alonso was top 20.
Huh.
And she ended up getting her own sitcom.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I was top five was Felipe Esparza winning. Second was Mike DiStefano. No, second was Tommy John again. Third was Mike DiStefano. Fourth was Roy Woods Jr.
Yeah.
And fifth was Mike Kaplan.
We all went
on a big tour, 80-city tour.
So how long have you been a vegan?
Since 2011, I think.
Just because?
No, man. I was trying to lose weight on the Atkins diet.
Oh.
And I didn't do what they say. Like, hey, go talk to a physician.
Yeah.
So I was eating cheese and Diet Cokes and meat.
Yeah.
And no water and no lettuce and no tomato. So I was constipated like for about 4 days.
Yeah.
Not going to the bathroom.
Yeah.
Like I had to take a Lamaze class, you know, whatever. Yeah. But it was bad, bro.
Yeah.
So, man, finally I just got tired, man. And I just pushed it all out and I hurt myself. And I got like a hemorrhoid.
Yeah.
And my blood was bleeding. I felt like I was raped by a ghost at night.
Yeah.
It just felt so bad.
Yeah.
That I was afraid to take a shit after a while.
Yeah.
So I just stopped eating, man, for like 3 days now.
Yeah.
So I said I stopped eating and I lost a lot of weight. And I was working on this movie called Taco Shop.
Yeah.
So I said I'm not going to eat no more.
And that was it?
I'm not going to eat meat no more. I'm not going to eat anything that's hard to digest.
Oh.
So I don't eat cheese or meat.
And do you feel better?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. So where are you at now with the drugs? Just weed?
Just weed.
Yeah.
I did mushrooms for the first time with my wife like 4 years ago.
Yeah. How was that?
I felt alive when it was all done.
Yeah.
I felt newborn.
Yeah. That's
and
good.
I felt like a new person.
Yeah.
I felt like if somebody would have given me this when I was hooked on crack, I would have quit.
Yeah.
Like if somebody would have gave me this in dosages.
Yeah.
Because I would have just quit, you
right,
know?
Right, right, because, yeah, you don't
need it. I don't need it.
Right.
Yeah.
And you got, how many kids?
I have three.
Yeah.
I had one when I was in, two of them when I was like in high school and one later on.
Yeah.
And I have my stepson from my wife.
And you're still married and everything?
Yeah, I'm married to my wife. We live together. We've been together since 2006.
Oh, that's good. And you produce stuff together? And...
Yes. My wife is like my manager. She's the executive producer of all my specials.
Oh, that's good. I like the special, though. Last one was good.
Lisa Esparza.
Yeah. And what's the podcast called?
The podcast that I do with Rodrigo Torres and Martin Rizzo and my wife is called What's Up Food Podcast. But my wife and I, we have our own podcast that we did for a couple of episodes. It's called Enchilada Casserole.
Uh-huh.
And we talk about a relationship. We talk about us trying to have a baby.
Oh, yeah.
We talk about her miscarriages.
Oh.
And then we talk about growing up with our violent parents.
Oh, yeah.
More personal.
Oh, but you only did a couple of those?
Yeah, like 10.
Uh-huh. Did you? And so when was that?
That was like, man, 6 years ago.
So you were able to have a baby?
No, we didn't have a baby.
Oh.
My wife ended up having a hysterectomy.
Oh, she did?
Yeah.
Oh.
We had like two, three miscarriages. Oh. Miscarriages.
That's weird.
One was in the car while we were driving to a show. We were trying to get to the hotel,
yeah.
And it was like the scene from Reservoir Dogs. You know when they shot Tim Roth?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Because I was passing her because she was bleeding from her uterus, so I kept passing her like those baby diapers, those big ones, so she could wipe herself over and over.
Oh.
And then there was traffic. We're almost there, honey.
To the hospital.
Yeah. And then when we got we went to the hotel.
Oh.
And then in the hotel, she had the miscarriage there. And she that's just terrible. Caught it. And
that's terrible. But you got a joke out of it.
Yeah.
Well, that's what it was funny when I was watching the latest special, like, because I used to be dirtier. And there was this time where it's like, you know, they tell people like, you don't want to be too blue, but there was never that many guys doing it.
No.
And like, you know, like, cause I watch your stuff and I'm like, I like this honest fucking sex, weird shit. And I used to do it myself. And then at some point I got older, I just stopped doing it. But there was always this thing like, you don't want to be blue, but no one was doing it like that. I mean, there were guys that were talking dirty, but when you really talk about fucking, there wasn't that many of us doing it. And I like seeing it again.
I know, like, to me, like my friend would tell me, like, the veterans,
yeah,
like Willie and them, bro, you gotta work clean, bro. You're never gonna work. You gotta cross over to white people.
Right.
Or you gotta be clean.
Yeah.
Then one time, Paul Rodriguez told me, listen, man, don't worry about none of that stuff.
Yeah.
If you're funny enough, eventually they're gonna just cross over to you.
Yeah, right. And that was the right advice.
That was the right advice, man.
Yeah.
But I remember, like, I would see Joe Diaz destroy, being dirty.
Yeah.
And they were talking about having crabs on his eyebrows.
Yeah.
And, like, I was working clean all the time.
Yeah.
Like, I never talk about that stuff.
Yeah.
I never did that stuff. But then after a while, you know what? Fuck this. I'm going to just be me.
Right.
Nobody's going to be better than being me.
That's the best way.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Joey's a character, too. And he's, you live the life. And then, you know, you talk about this stuff. Like, I don't know. I don't know if I got less dirty. I just got nicer. And, but there was a time where you just talk about all that shit. And it's a very specific zone, man. And you don't see it that much. And it was funny, man. So you're doing good.
Yeah, I'm doing good, man. Like, I'm on a show on Gentified. I'm in one episode on Netflix called Gentified.
Uh-huh.
Gentified.
Yeah.
It's about a town, Boyle Heights, that's being gentrified by white people. And
that's happening.
Yeah, but also the community who lives there are also part of the gentrification, because a lot of the kids are not moving.
Yeah.
So you got these hipsters who are Mexican who live with their parents.
Oh, interesting.
In Boyle Heights.
Because there was actually some friction, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Is it a documentary or is it?
It's a show. It's a series that directed and written and produced by Linda Yvette Chavez and Marvin Lemus.
Oh, good. So is Father Boyle still alive?
Father Boyle's still alive. He's still kicking it at the homeboy industry.
Did you ever work over there?
Never worked over there. When I was in rehab, it was the beginning of homeboy industry.
Mm.
Back then, it was called Jobs for the Future.
Okay.
Jobs, not jails.
You still talk to that guy?
Yes, I do talk to him. I still donate money. When I won Last Comic Standing, I donated my money to them.
That's nice. Do you ever call him for advice?
Sometimes.
Oh.
I stop by every once in a while. He's a busy man, you know?
Yeah.
He travels. He speaks a lot.
But he's always nice to you.
He's always been nice to me.
Well, good, man. I'm glad we did this, man. Good talking to you.
Yeah, man.
Felipe Esparza. Hope you set your clocks back yesterday. Because if you didn't, you're late. Or early. I guess you'd be early, right? How come no one's here yet? Oh, fuck. Play some guitar. Everywhere. Hey, folks, this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. You know all those times you've heard guests sneeze on the show? Well, actually, you don't hear any of that because we cut the sneezes out when we're editing. But take my word for it, people definitely sneeze in here, and when they do, I've got a box of Kleenex on the table right in front of them so they can use one and get right back to business. And here's what Kleenex means to me: a tissue that will hold up. We've all used those other tissues that you blow holes right through. When I see Kleenex, I know that tissue is up for the job. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.